just 1 month away from the NFL draft. I think that calls for a few mocks, rounds 1 through 7. The New York Jets for the Jet Nation Live crew, myself, Dylan Terman, Chris Schubert, will also cover the comments made at the owners' meetings just a few days ago. I know I did a follow-up as soon as Sala wrapped up, but I want to get thoughts from Dylan and Chris. We'll see how that goes. I'm Glenn Naughton, Jet Nation Radio, JetNation.com. Be sure to log into JetNation.com where you can register and become a part of what is the most active Jets message board on the web. So, gentlemen, Robert Sala, Joe Douglas, Woody Johnson all met with the media this week. I'll throw out a couple of the points that I thought were, you know, because a lot of it is, you know, is fluff. But there were a few comments that were made that I thought were interesting that came from each person. To me, Robert Sala, I liked that he said Rodgers is expected to be ready. There was no reason he shouldn't be, but you kind of wanted to hear that. But the key things to me from Sala, the biggest one, and we've discussed this, Dylan, on the chat on the video, the comments about Keith Carter. For Sala to come out and say that, you know, Keith Carter is working on, he's working on it because he knows that sometimes his message gets lost in the tone, which to me means he's not a good communicator. Like he's saying good things, but the way he talks to people doesn't go over well. So that's why you get players clowning him on social media. But again, he's apparently aware of it and working on it. He also touched on an interesting comment about Bryce Huff, and Joe Douglas kind of echoed it. In letting him walk, Sala said, sometimes players bet on themselves and they win. And the question was, why wasn't he signed sooner? So to say, well, sometimes guys bet on themselves and they win, that suggests to me the Jets came to him and said, we want to keep you. Here's our offer. And maybe his reps said, you know what? We got a year to get this guy paid. We believe he can do that. We're not going to do a deal right now. And perhaps, and then Joe Douglas kind of said, when he was asked the same question, he said, well, we were able to get Quinnen done before his walk here, but that wasn't the case with Bryce. So that, again, tells me they tried, they approached him, but Huff was willing to bet on himself. And as Sala said, he won. Woody Johnson, of course, backed off the critical comments of Zach Wilson. I think that has a lot to do with if you're trying to trade the guy, you shouldn't be telling everyone he's worthless. Now, you know, Woody's saying he's got value. But funny enough, after the Sala presser, I did my video and I said fans might have to get used to the idea of maybe Zach returning if they can't find a taker. Woody was asked about that and said, if we can't find a trade partner, we will not release Zach. So my thought is you bring him back. You hope he does something in camp to get you a day three pick if someone else's backup gets hurt. I don't know what will happen from there. But those are some of the interesting comments for me. The Huff stuff, the Zach stuff, the Keith Carter being aware of his shortcomings and working on them. What were your guys' thoughts on these issues? Let's go ahead and kick it off, Dylan.
Oh, he's muted. He muted in the pre-show, and he's in a new place.
You're worse than Keith Carter.
Yeah,
yep, it's okay. I'm on uncle duty, so I had to mute myself in case the baby woke up.
Glenn, set him up again. We'll just pretend it didn't happen.
All right. So those are the comments we wanted to discuss this week about or coming out of the owners' meetings in Orlando. Dylan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so normal sound problems here, you know, obviously, but Keith Carter, I'll start with him first because that's the comment I made on your YouTube video. You referenced the Taylor Lewan thing. I think that is important because any player that comes out and speaks negatively about a coach is damning. Obviously, it's not a good look, especially when you lose your job and then you get hired by a team right away. I feel like Nathaniel Hackett, Keith Carter kind of both fit into that mold. Maybe I'm just a Lewan hater, but like, I feel like there has been a lot of controversy around him. Like he didn't want to play right tackle. He only played 5 games in 18 games in his last 3 seasons, 5, 13, and 2. All of those came under Keith Carter. I'm not going to say he got hurt and didn't want to play for Keith Carter. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. It's just really hard for me to sit here and take Taylor Lewan's word for, like, you know, as like the end all be all. Obviously Mekhi Becton has come out, shared the tweet. Breece Hall has said something about the tweet as well. So there's clearly some friction caused by Keith Carter, which is important because the Jets are not in a position to have any coaches creating friction. Although I will say to have a positive spin on it is this offseason seems like a self-reflection period for a lot of these coaches who are probably going to lose their job if things don't go perfectly well in 2024. And Keith Carter is like top of that list. I'd put him above Nate Hackett as far as people who should go if shit hits the fan this season. Like, I know Woody doesn't fire coaches midseason, but if the offensive line gets hurt and looks like crap again, Keith Carter could be a casualty midseason. Obviously, Nathaniel Hackett's probably going to stay as long as Aaron Rodgers is New York Jet. So Keith Carter is probably like number one on the chopping block. So you can't dismiss the negative things said, but it is nice to hear we're self-reflecting on it. We're trying to correct these things. And he does come off as maybe a little abrasive to some of these players. And I feel like that's kind of the new age of just sports in general. Coaching has had to make a big adjustment with some of these athletes. They don't take coaching the same way. That's not a negative on the players or the coaches themselves. But when you have a coach who's done something a certain way for so many years, and you have a lot of younger athletes coming up that have been coached differently their whole life, there's going to be a little bit of tension. So that first and foremost, I wanted to say is a negative, but I will put the positive self-reflection spin on it. Bryce Huff, that's just, it's unfortunate. Like, this whole thing is so crappy, especially with Jadeveon Clowney going to Carolina. You're probably looking at maybe trading for Hassan Reddick. And then Joe Douglas looks like the fool for, you know, giving Philadelphia a pick, essentially giving them Bryce Huff and paying $14 million for Hassan Reddick if that is the path they choose. So it was unfortunate to hear both of them say that. To your point about the contract situation, there are players, and I don't know if this is Bryce Huff specifically, but there are players who do not do contract talks as soon as the season starts. They get into camp, they try to work it out, but as soon as the preseason and regular season starts, we saw it with Lamar Jackson, they weren't going to pursue any talks after a certain amount of time because they want to focus on football. Perhaps that's what Bryce did. And by the time it was too late, and it seemed like Joe Douglas knew it was too late to offer him something, it was like it was already written on the wall that he was probably going to leave. So that was definitely an unfortunate. It sounded like they both missed him or are going to miss him, especially Saleh. And that he even doubled down and said, we need front seven help. You'll see our mock drafts probably all reflect that. I know you've seen mine. I haven't seen your guys's, but we would definitely add front seven help at some point this offseason, whether it's via trade, an older free agent. I know Bud Dupree is still available. But then the Zach Wilson stuff, I mean, Woody, come on, dude. You're going to drag a kid through the mud. And I mean, rightfully so. The kid sucks. But like, you can't drag somebody through the mud to the media, say, we didn't have a backup quarterback. It's all the backup quarterback's fault. We're going to turn over every stone to replace this kid. And then when the trade, you know, market kind of shrivels up, when Justin Fields gets traded for a sixth round pick, you're looking at, all right, do we give Zach in a sixth round pick just to offload the $5 million and take a seventh round pick in return? If we could trade for a 10th round pick, I'm sure the Jets would try to find a way to make it happen for just to get Zach Wilson off the books. But you can't talk shit about a player and then say, oh, we're going to keep him as the third quarterback. He's not making the initial 53, especially if they draft a guy like even a Jordan Travis who broke his leg and is rehabbing. They're not going to keep a Zach Wilson over anybody that they view as the developmental drafted quarterback. So now you're in a situation, you're not carrying four quarterbacks. We've been down this road before too many times with the Jets, and they did change the rule about practice squad elevations for the emergency quarterback. You could do it as many times as you want, but if nobody's going to trade for Zach Wilson, somebody's probably going to snatch him up as soon as you cut him to try to put him back on your practice squad. That's just how the NFL works. Somebody's going to take a flyer on the kid and do the same thing that you're trying to do with him. So just kind of an unfortunate loop of circumstances, it seems. Like, we all knew the Bryce Huff thing was coming to an end. They could have done a lot of things differently, and the dominoes have fallen this way. The Will McDonald pick, et cetera, we talked about it last week. So a lot of, you know, good, important information, but at the same time, a lot of just like talking in circles about how much they screwed up and they're trying to fix it. So I don't know. I agree that there are issues with all three of those topics, but I'm at the point now, Rick. All right, we just got to move on from Zach. We got to find another edge to replace Bryce so we can stop crying about it. And, you know, Keith Carter, unfortunately, he's here to stay, and he's going to be number one on the chopping block. So that's kind of just my take on the whole thing.
I'll start with the Zach stuff first, because I think it's really telling, at least in my mind, that he openly, and by he, I mean Woody Johnson, openly said that if we do not trade him, he is going to be on this roster in 2024. Now, I will tell you, spoiler alert, I have the Jets taking a quarterback in my mock draft that we're going to reveal here in a little bit. So I don't expect him to be on the roster. But I do think we should begin to get comfortable with the reality that he could be on this team in 2024. Would I say it's a 15-20% chance? Yeah, that's probably the ceiling I would put on it right now. And let me... Everybody gather real close to your listening devices where you're consuming this podcast right now, because I think this is very important. For everybody out there who's concerned about the Jets having Zach Wilson on their roster in 2024, because in their mind, he is like a cockroach that won't go away, and at some point, the Jets will have to play him in 2024. I'm here to tell you, if the New York Jets at any point are down to their third quarterback, I don't care if it's Zach Wilson, I don't care if it's any of the three quarterbacks that we probably have drafted in our mock drafts tonight, the Jets season is over. Done. Capital letters O-V-E-R. It doesn't matter who they put out there at quarterback. So this idea of, oh, we can't have Zach on the roster because what if he's thrown into action? It doesn't matter. If the Jets go through Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor, it's over. Done. The 2024 Jets are not a thing anymore. Robert Saleh is going to be looking for a new job. The Jets are going to be resetting at this position. It's going to be over. So it doesn't matter if Zach Wilson is the third quarterback. And I do think, and again, 15-20%, I would say probably 10% of that is I think Aaron Rodgers might say, this kid's now going to get the year that he should have gotten last year, and I can help this kid. I can help him be the best version of himself. And I think that is a legitimate possibility. The Bryce Huff stuff, I think, is interesting in this context because it's easy to go to a guy and present a contract in front of him that you think is super comfortable for what you are trying to do when it comes to the cap. But Bryce Huff probably wants to get paid like a player who's a every down pass rusher. And I don't think the New York Jets and Joe Douglas were ever going to pay him in that stratosphere because they didn't view him that way. Not that I shouldn't say they didn't view him that way. That is not how they operate at that position. They have a lot of guys. That's why they took Will McDonald in the first round, despite having 47 pass rushers already on the roster, because they value rotation. They value having four or five guys at that position. So they're not going to pay one guy an exorbitant amount of money. And so this was always going to be this way. Bryce Huff viewed himself as, this is my opportunity. I have shown you in the limited opportunities that you've given me that I am a legitimate pass rusher. Pay me like one. And the Jets say, we're not interested in that. Go find a team that is willing to do that. Philadelphia was. So again, I get it. I love Bryce and I would love to be on this team, but the two sides saw it differently and they were never going to be able to get over that hurdle. The money was the easy part. They had to get over the hurdle of how they viewed each other, and that just was never going to happen. Last thought on the Keith Carter thing, and then maybe we can get into this mock draft because I'm sure we have 47 picks to discuss. This year, you're going to get, I think, the best version of Robert Saleh. You're going to get the best version of Nathaniel Hackett. You're going to get the best version of Jeff Ulbrich. You're going to get the best version of Keith Carter. You're going to get the best version of every positional coach up and down the offense, defense, special teams, everybody. You're going to get the best version of them. The question that the three of us have to answer, the question that everybody listening to this podcast has to answer is, do you think their best is good enough? Because their jobs are on the line. Their futures in the NFL are on the line. They're going to give you their best because they know if they do not come through this year with a good enough coaching job, it's going to take them a while to get back to the high level, specifically in the case of a Keith Carter or a Nathaniel Hackett. Saleh probably can get a DC job somewhere because of how good he is defensively. But another head coaching gig, that might take a couple cycles. So you're going to get the best from them. But the question you have to ask yourself is that best going to be good enough? I've been on the record on this show that I do not think it is going to be. It is the biggest thing that I think is going to hold this team back in 2024 is the coaching. But you're going to get the best from them. I just don't know if it's going to be good enough.
And that's a good point. You know, that's something that I've kind of, that's why I'm, no matter how the draft goes, no matter who they take, no matter what the roster looks like at the start of the season, I keep telling myself, just temper your expectations. Because if this team hits their ceiling and they win 11 games, what they win enough games to go to the playoffs. Once you're in the playoffs, you're not facing, you know, you're facing top-notch head coaches and you're not, you know, you're not maybe beating some of the mid lower tier guys, which is where Robert Saleh resides at the moment. You know, but you're having to beat guys who have been there before, players who have been there before, and everything gets more difficult. So we'll see with that. The only comment, Dylan, and I think we'd agree with this. I've said that too, that they have to find a replacement for Huff. But of course, McDonald becomes Huff's replacement. They really have to find a replacement for McDonald, basically those, you know, the 20% of the snaps last year. But losing Clowney, you know, I think that kind of stings a little bit. I think that would have been a nice addition, but it is what it is. Let's get into this mock, fellas. Yes. So the only rules
I cooked.
The only rules we had in place for this mock draft was that we couldn't go crazy with trades.
I made one trade. I made one.
We can make two trades. We could trade out of 10 one time. One of the trades could be moving out of 10, move up, move down, whatever it may be. And then you could trade one more time after that, wherever you like. So we didn't want 3, 4, 5, 6 trades with hundreds of picks. So we'll go, we'll just go round by round. We'll each, instead of having one person do their full mock and critique. So go ahead, Dylan, we've seen your mock, Dylan. So go ahead and kick it off. Tell the fans what you did and who you got.
Yeah. Kind of like Chris, I was a little, excited about the mock that I pulled off this morning. So I sent it to the group chat. It didn't include the words "I cooked," but I felt that way when I was finished. Obviously, my first round pick, like Glenn said, we had the option to make two trades up or down from 10. And then from there, I decided to go against the grain. I just assumed both of these guys were going to trade back from 10. I know this is an option we've talked about. I went the other way. I traded up and I got the guy who was trending today a lot on Twitter. I traded with the Tennessee Titans. So I moved up from 10 to 7. I gave up 10. I gave up 134, which was the pick that we got in return from Baltimore for the Morgan Moses trade. And I traded next year's third round pick. So I know that that does not sound like a lot. And the bar on PFF was completely maxed out. And that was my goal, was to overpay according to the simulator. Caveat, I would give more to move up these three picks. And I went and selected Malik Nabers, wide receiver, LSU. He's just a dog. You can run the offense through him. Garrett, Breece, you have tons of options. At 6 foot, 200 pounds, this dude just lit it up today. I think it was a 42-inch vertical, 10.75 in the broad. He ran a 4.35 unofficial 40. They thought he was going to be in the 4.5s, 4.6s. You see a lot of Malik Nabers, wide receiver one tweets. I'm not quite there yet. I still think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one guy. So I went and got the next best thing. And I think that it's, not splitting hairs, but it's as close to you can get as splitting hairs between him and Harrison. I think there's a bit of a drop off to the next guy in Adunze, in my opinion. So I was like, all right, we're going to either swing for a home run in Nabers, or we're going to just sit tight at 10 and probably take an offensive tackle. The board fell in a weird way. I'll just be completely transparent. Joe Alt was still there at 10. I thought that was a bit unrealistic, so I didn't take him just for the realism of the mock. So I had Malik Nabers going at number 7, but I would give up another pick next year. All our 6th and 7th round picks this year, we've talked about the shallow draft talent pool in the late day 3s. So I would give up more to go get Malik Nabers than what I did, and I understand why people like kind of poo-pooed on it, but yeah, Malik Nabers at 7 was the pick.
I mean, I don't think anyone's going to complain about that. We talked about it before the show, right? There are a lot of guys you can take at 10, and there are not many that you could take that I would complain about.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got, Chris?
I stayed at 10. I didn't move. I didn't move up. I didn't move back. And I will tell you, the board fell in a very interesting way. I went into this, and you used PFF. Dylan, I used NFL mock draft database. I know there's a lot of different mock draft simulators that you can use for this project. You use PFF. I used mock draft database. So lots of different options that you could use. So the board fell to me in an extremely interesting way. And I thought to myself, listen, I'm going to make Glenn happy. I'm going to take Brock Bowers. That's going to be my selection with the number 10 overall pick.
Good job.
And I went in and I said, that's what I'm going to do. Well, the board kind of fell in a different way. So Brock Bowers, I tossed that card out. I said, I'm not submitting that one to the league.
Terrible. F.
Because Joe Alt was available at 10.
So
I said, Joe Alt available at 10. Don't mind if I do. Doesn't have to play right away. Can sit and learn. If we have an injury, he can very easily go right in there. So I could not pass up the opportunity. Do I think it's possible? It's probably on the lower end. But looking at the players that went in front of Joe Alt, and I think that's more important instead of like the exact team player fit, because there was some weird stuff that happened with the quarterbacks. But in front, you had May, Daniels, McCarthy, and Caleb Williams all go, right? So all four of those quarterbacks went. Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers went for me. Fuaga went off the board early. Laitu Latu went off the board early. And I think the one that's a little interesting, the one that I think probably is the wrinkle in this, Brian Thomas Jr. went off the board a little early. So that's where potentially there could be a problem. But he went to the Bears one pick in front of me, and it didn't feel like Chicago's a huge tackle spot with the investments that they've made over the last couple of years. So I didn't feel super bad about taking Joe Alt. It didn't feel super unrealistic based on the players that fell, an edge player coming off the board. If it wasn't Glatzu, it could be Turner, right? If it's not Fuaga, it could be Fashanu. So there could be ways for this to fall. So I didn't feel too bad about it. Joe Alt, the selection for me at number 10.
So real quick before Glenn goes, you ultimately had Alt, Adunze, and Bowers. Those were your three that were probably at the top of the board there at 10
yes.
for you.
So those three, Brock Bowers, Rome Adunze, and Joe Alt, the three guys that I considered. Although there was part of me that was like, you know, Dallas Turner wouldn't be too bad in this edge rotation. But I stopped myself because I know that's what Joe Douglas is thinking. So I stopped myself.
Yeah, that's
Wild Wave's mad at me. Wild Wave is mad at me because see, I didn't trade up. He's mad at me.
I think that's it's a conversation we had briefly. I tweeted it out. I put the topic on JetNation.com on the forums. You know, is there a defensive player they could take that wouldn't piss you off? Like, and you know where this conversation comes from, Chris. Of course, I was listening to the Locked On Network, which they've got some great content, great podcasts on there. And a couple guys you know, and Joe and Kyle. And those guys. They went with Murphy at 10. And I thought to myself, you know, my initial reaction was no way they're going defense. But then as I, you know, in literally the same thought, I was like, would I be mad if that was the Jets lineup week one? That dude next to Quinnen Williams? No, I couldn't be like, oh, I can't believe they did this.
See?
You can't believe what? They've assembled the best 1-2 punch in the NFL on the interior. So I wouldn't hate it. I know 99% of fans would hate it, but I would completely get where the team was coming from and what that could mean for them. So,
and that's exactly what Joe Douglas does. You just did what Joe Douglas does in the room. He goes, yeah, you know, I like all these guys, but, you know, adding Murphy to the defensive line would be pretty cool. And then that's how Will McDonald gets selected. Like, that's how it happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The difference here being, of course, he would play this year, but
fair enough.
But either way, so, you know, some fans want, you know, they don't want defense no matter. And I get it. I get it. We've, you know, how many years of offensive futility. So I don't have the compensation I received in return because I did my mock, saved it. And then I didn't, I can't remember what I gave up, but I moved down, of course, because I am determined to recoup that second round pick. I can't not have that second round pick. Although I made the trade, got the second, and the guy I was going to take went one pick before my pick, of course. But 15, Brock Bowers fell to 15. I was not, and I've been thinking about this because they were talking about this on a draft show the other day, and I think because I like him so much, I'm overvaluing. Like, there is a chance he falls to 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I see, you know, Daniel Jeremiah say he's a top 7 player. I think Matt Miller, who's not as high on him as most, says he's a top 5 player. Like, he is undeniably a top 10 talent in this class. So I've, as much as I like him, with what the pundits are saying, I've just kind of convinced myself this guy's going top 10. The other day, and the point you just made, Chris, there are a lot of good players. Good players are going to fall, and there's no reason why that good player can't be Bowers and others. So I traded down. I wanted to go 18, 19, 20, but I thought that was too risky. Traded down to 15, added pick 49. I gave up 10. I don't think I gave up any more. I may have given up a pick next year, but I ended up with 15 and 49. I took Brock Bowers at 15, listed as a tight end, plays all over the place. We don't need to go in any more depth on him. I think we've covered him quite enough.
Glenn, what did you feel about Kyle Hamilton in the 2022 draft? You like him? Think he was a top 10 player?
Pre-draft, I liked him.
Okay. He went 14.
What's that?
Like, yeah. He's a guy that everyone was like, unicorn at the position, top 5 talent, got to have him. He fell to 14 to Baltimore.
Yeah.
So it happens. So and guess what? It's at a position. Safety is one of those positions where, am I really going to take a safety in the top 5, top 7? Yep. Tight end. Am I really going to take a tight end? Kyle Pitts. Like, these things can occur to where you can trick yourself, or at least internally you could be like, do I really want to do this? And then we've seen this, guys. Once the slide starts, sometimes it's hard to stop it. Sometimes it's a snowball and it just goes out of control.
So, yeah, Will sometimes Levis. It's a matter of there's only one team, there's a true fit, and they might love the guy, but they might have one guy they love a little more, so they don't take that guy like Brock Bowers, and then the next 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 teams like him, but they have other players. So, like I said, I think part of it, too, is just preparing myself. Like, don't even think about this guy being there. That scenario would never unfold. Too good to be true. But it's not as far out of the realm of possibility as I've been treating it so far.
And I figured we were going to spend a little bit extra time on the first round pick. So I just wanted to bring up, I know I put it in the group chat, Jim Harbaugh talking about offensive line play at the owners meeting.
Yes.
I am so torn on what the hell they're going to do at 5.
Smoke screen.
And I think
smoke screen. It's a smoke screen,
baby. It very well could be. And they could easily just Malik Nabers or whoever the best wide receiver is at the time. But I'm so conflicted on what they do at five that I think that that's going to start a run on offensive tackles, or it could, you know, potentially, you know, be in the middle of the wide receiver run. So I think five at the Chargers is really the pivotal spot before the Jets, because we assume quarterback is the likely scenario, depending on if all those teams stick and pick. But then you have, you know, Cardinals four, Marvin Harrison Jr. probably. And then five is that pivot point. Six, seven, eight, nine are kind of toss-ups based on five. And then the Jets kind of just get whoever falls in their lap, I feel. So I feel like we all made a good pick, and you can't really go wrong with any of the people we picked. Obviously, even if it's not Joe Alt, if it's Olufoshanu, like maybe if it was Roma Dunze instead of Malik Nabers, not in a trade-up situation. Obviously, there's no replacement for Brock Bowers, but I feel like there's no wrong answer for the Jets at 10. Unless the player just flat out sucks. And like, that's a good place to be, I feel.
All right. So,
I don't have a second round pick. I know Glenn traded back to get the second. I'm back in the third round, pick 72. I didn't go, you know, I basically was thinking of the Byron Murphy type of, you know, idea here. And I went and I got Tavondre Sweat, the other Texas defensive tackle. Somebody yelled at me and said he'd be the fourth defensive tackle on the team. I think he'd probably be 2B, maybe. You know, you have Quinnen and Kinlaw as your starters in like obvious pass situations. But Tavondre Sweat next to Quinnen Williams on first and 10 when you're a run-heavy team, sign me up. So I was all for it. He was a monster down at the Senior Bowl. You're going to see a trend here in my Mock 1. It's going to be a heavy Senior Bowl, you know, contingent, but Tavondre Sweat, he raised eyebrows. He's a big man. I think he's like 340 something. So he's just going to clog the middle, pass downs, run downs especially. I honestly think he would play over Kinlaw, and I understand that they paid him a decent amount of money, $6.5 million guaranteed or whatever it was. But between him, Kinlaw, Solomon Thomas, and who's the other guy that they brought back? It's like $10 million of non-Quinnen Williams defensive tackles. You could easily fit Tavondre Sweat into that and plug and play, and he's going to be a starter on day one. So I know it's not the sexy offense back-to-back, but I had to get Tavondre Sweat there at 72 because he was still there.
You say the sexy pick is offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I did, but I didn't do it in the third round, Glenn, because there's another way to acquire a second round pick, and that's if you move up. So that's exactly what I did. I packaged some picks together because those day three picks, you can have them. I don't want to be picking on day three. I'm packaging my picks together, and I'm moving on up the board. So what I did is I took 72 and 185 in the sixth round. I called up the defending Super Bowl champs. I said, hey, Kansas City, what's going on? You want 72 and 185? They said yes. So I moved up to 64. So I moved up eight spots. And you know what I did? I took a guy that was at the Senior Bowl. I took an offensive player. I took a wide receiver. Give me Ricky Pearsall with pick number 64 for the New York Jets. Thank you very much.
Your guy.
Listen, we've talked about Pearsall. I love Pearsall. I was actually watching LSU Florida early today.
Yeah, and you stopped and you're like, wow, Ricky Pearsall, amazing.
Ricky Pearsall, like I said, the fully extended diving over-the-shoulder catch I saw him make about 3 years ago put him on my radar. Started tweeting out about him, and he's only gotten better as his college career has gone on. I actually almost took him in one of the mocks because, you know, I did a couple to sort of lead up to this, and I ended up passing on him, but I would 100% be thrilled if the Jets grabbed him. If anyone's not familiar with Ricky Pearsall, we've talked about who was it? He made the best catch of the year in college football this year, and I can't remember who it was against. The over the middle, fully extended, one hand out. Yeah. I forget. I tweeted it out. And I can't remember who it is. May have been. I think it may have been. But either way, just, you know what? Go to YouTube, put in Ricky Pearsall highlights. You're going to see that play.
Yep.
So what I did, pick 49, was, as I said, the player I was going to take went at 48. And that player was, in fact, Tavondre Sweat. Dylan, that's a home run pick. Anybody saying he would be the fourth tackle is out of their mind. He is a starter from day one. He can plug the middle. He can collapse the pocket. I would love to have that guy playing next to Quinnen Williams. Get him at 72 is crazy. He was gone at 48 in my – and this is the thing. Every mock machine you use has different rankings and stacks these guys differently. He went at 48 in mine, and Dylan got him at 72. And listen, it happens in real life, right? Like, teams at the grades are all over the map. So once Tavondre Sweat was gone, having gotten Bowers early, I thought, you know what? I'm going to double dip on offense. Here's a guy we've talked about a fair bit. Loved him at the Senior Bowl. Loved him before the Senior Bowl. I took Western Kentucky wide receiver Malachi Corley. So now we are fully loaded on offense with Corley, with Mike Williams, with Garrett Wilson, with with Brock Bowers. Aaron Rodgers can just sling the ball all around the field and have targets everywhere he looks. And Bowers and Corley, in addition, the best yards after catch players at their respective positions in this class.
So wait, you're saying you got Sweat and Corley, or you took Sweat in a different one?
No. Sweat was gone. Sweat went at I had picked 49. Sweat went at 48, so I took Corley at 49.
I can't complain there. You know, Malachi Corley is literally my guy. He's like my draft crush. I'm not going to say he's the next Deebo Samuel, but if you're looking for a mold of somebody similar to Deebo Samuel, this is probably the best you're going to get. And I mean, his glow up in terms of body size, and you and I both noted this at the Senior Bowl, Glenn, like this dude has done a full body transformation.
Literally the first thing I said when we walked in and saw the players, I was like, why is Malachi Corley way bigger than I thought he was? And it turned out he's been doing this program for a few months. And when you're watching film of him from earlier in the year, he's not the same guy anymore. He's much bigger, broad shoulders. He looks like a monster. So we can get on the same page here. Because Dylan, you did your 72. Chris, what's your next pick?
111 is the next one for me. I had to use some capital to move up, you know?
Okay, so Chris traded 72. Dylan, picked at 72. Let me go ahead and do my 72, and then we'll start at 111, okay?
Cool.
Okay. So my pick at 72, addressed the offensive line, got a tackle, Roger Rosengarten, guy who, honestly, I kind of soured on, and you really shouldn't after one bad game, but I thought he was pretty bad in the national championship game, had some penalties, looked a little bit sloppy. But the body of work, you go back and look at him, super athletic guy. You know, when you look at these right tackles and people say, can the guy move to left tackle? Well, you've got to have the athleticism. I think he has the athleticism. If they want to use him as a swing, let him work at both, or just move him over to left tackle, and there's not a rush to get him in the lineup day one, because you hopefully have Tyron Smith for, hopefully a couple months if he's going to get injured and you don't need him day one. And that way you've added another tackle, a developmental guy who played at a major program, won a lot of big games. Super athletic and really aggressive too. I like the way he goes out and attacks rushers. If guys don't come to him, he'll come find you and go after guys. I like that about him. So I'm taking Rosengarten at 72, building some more depth in the trenches. And then we have pick 111. Where Dylan, what do you got?
Yeah, pick 111. I go back to the same school. I found my third round player, and I find Christian Jones, offensive tackle from Texas. Again, another Senior Bowl player. I knew that within my first three picks, I had to address offensive tackle, and I felt like Christian Jones is probably the last of that tier break of emergency starter for 2024, but isn't a full developmental prospect. And like you said, if you can get a couple, the early months out of Tyron Smith, maybe 10, 11 games, and you can sit, Christian Jones down and have him learn for a couple months, and then he kicks up and he's either the swing tackle or, starter for 3, 4, 5 games this season. I honestly think he's like the last of that tier. Everybody else underneath him was a little questionable in terms of, would I want to see this guy on the field in 2024? Christian Jones, he held his own at the Senior Bowl. Again, another Senior Bowl guy. I don't know. Maybe it's just me and my affinity for Texas. I don't know. I didn't even think I was a Texas fan like that. But to get the two guys in the trenches that were, I wouldn't say the most dominant, because Sweat, obviously, there's Byron Murphy. But, like, they're dominant in their own right. And Christian Jones proved that at the Senior Bowl. So, really excited to add him. Again, I don't know if he's even going to be there at 111. PFF had him there. I think we all use different mocks. But Christian Jones at 111, I felt like a steal for what he could be in terms of his immediate plus long-term value. Yeah, here he is.
Wow, look at Glenn having the highlights ready to go.
I should have plugged in my highlights earlier, but I just grabbed the drive, and we should have a fair number of highlights from here on out. So he's number 70 on the end. You see him here.
Yep, good right tackle.
Get a hold of this edge guy. Moves him right out of the way. Opens up a running lane. Yep. Powerful guy. Showed that at the Senior Bowl. Really, he's probably one of those guys I hadn't watched as much of as some others, but he jumped out to me in Mobile. Especially, I feel like on day two, he really kind of jumped out.
I'll tell you this. When you're evaluating offensive tackles, there's a lot to look at. Like, you're watching a lot of stuff at the same time. But what earns you a nice little check mark in my book is if in the run game, you just take people and you just remove them from the screen. Like if you take a guy and he is no longer a part of the play, you throw him out of the club, I'm in. Like you are going to convince me that I can do something with you because of the physicality that you bring to the table and being a just a big guy up front that can just move people. 111 for me. What's better than two offensive picks in a row, gentlemen? Three offensive picks in a row. And we're going back to the Senior Bowl, Glenn. So let's see what highlights you have for this guy. Because if there's one thing that Joe Douglas likes to do, he likes to throw some day three picks out there on running backs. Michael Carter was a day three pick on a running back. Izzy Abandikanda, a day three pick on a running back. So let's go to the Senior Bowl and let's get running back out of Tennessee, Jalen Wright, to add to this offense. Yeah. Okay. Doesn't have to be a big guy for them right away. You still have Breece Hall. You still have Izzy, but you add another player to this mix, played in the SEC. Oh yeah. Taking player, yeah, pass protection. We know that that was a reason why Izzy couldn't get on the field because he couldn't pass protect. So that's a nice plus thing to have in the arsenal as well. So for me, again, we know they need to address the running back room. I think they need to add another body. For me personally, I think the day three picks this year are going to be more rolls of the dice. I think you're taking more project players that you need to do some stuff with and maybe not anticipate them being huge players on day one or on year one and year two. Give me a guy at a position that's already a strength for this team, and he can sit and watch behind Breece Hall and then at some point do things like this.
Balance, I was going to say that.
Explosion.
Yeah.
Yep. You said it right there. Explosive. That's the one word that I keep coming back to with Jalen Wright. 4.38 40, 11 foot 2 inch broad, 38 inch vert. Like this guy is just, and he can pass pro. I mean, like he's running back too if they don't sign a guy. So I love it.
Yes, I would agree. I think he would be above Izzy on my personal depth chart if they drafted him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few backs that I like, and he's one of them. He's a guy that you probably will get good value. You can get him later on, and he can be a playmaker for you. Let me see.
I will say, Chris, real quick, he pulled out of the Senior Bowl the night before day one. He was one of the six players that pulled
he's got
out.
The tag.
So he technically wasn't there.
Nah, he's got the tag next to his name when I take him on mock draftable, so he counts.
Yep.
If you have that tag next to your name, that's because, listen, all kidding aside, the Jets put an emphasis on guys that went to the Senior Bowl. Like, that's a big thing for them. And so if you've got that tag next to your name when I'm looking through players, that's going to shoot you up the board because you are a guy that I think the Jets are going to view a little bit more highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think here's a guy who would have been at the Senior Bowl if not for his injury. I'm taking a quarterback, developmental guy, Jordan Travis out of Florida State. It was between him and Michael Pratt. I like Travis's mobility more. I like the fact that he played at a bigger program, won a ton of games at a big program. See good patience, waits. This throw I loved. He put this ball in a perfect spot, waited for a passing lane to open up, and then hits Johnny Wilson, who's another guy. You know, listen, if not for the drops, he'd be getting a lot more hype. Johnny Wilson at 6'7", an absolute, you know, and great feet for his size. But Travis, the patience, the pump, waits for him to open up, gets it in there. If you've watched him play, you know he's got mobility, tons of plays with his legs, tons of plays with his arm. And again, have a young dude to sit behind. You know, he's a guy who can sit behind Tyrod Taylor, who can understand his style of play, and you know, along with Aaron Rodgers, help bring him along. But that's another thing that Tyrod brings is having that veteran presence. Because even in the past, when the Jets have carried a couple quarterbacks, it's not always been a guy who's got the experience to talk to the youngest one and try to, you know, give him some tips. So I like that dynamic there, and I'm a big fan of his. So that's who I went with at 111.
Absolutely. All right. I think I don't have a fifth round pick. I don't think.
Oh, you don't have
it, right?
134.
So, that was the fourth round pick I traded up to get Malik Nabers. So
I got 134.
So we gotta catch back up. Yep, I'm at 185.
Actually,
so I gotta.
Okay, with one of the picks I added, I think I'm up.
Okay.
Let me see. Cancel that. Yeah. So I ended up with.
Do you see why we only? Do you see everybody why we only allowed two trades? Did you see why? Because we didn't want to do this for every round. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I got Travis at 115, but in the deal I made, that's right. It was a deal I made later where I picked up pick 115, and with that pick I picked up Washington State safety Jaden Hicks.
You love this guy.
Yes, he does.
Really physical guy, big fan. Does a nice job in coverage and against the run. He's not a guy. He's not a one trick pony. Now, listen, he doesn't have elite. He's not going to bring, you know, all pro cover skills in the secondary, but he's going to be a lot better than what other teams have back there because too many of these guys are one-dimensional. Jaden Hicks fits that mold of guys who can be playing multiple spots. I can imagine Salah and Ulbrich would move him around and put him in a lot of different roles, but I get Jaden Hicks at 115.
Guys, you know what's better than three offensive picks in a row?
We're sensing a trend Chef picks. Chris.
Four offensive picks in a row. Glenn, hopefully you got the quarterback folder open and readily available because Michael Pratt of Tulane, who is also at the Senior Bowl, is the selection at 134. Look, I think this team is going to take a swing on day three on a developmental project quarterback to sit behind Aaron Rodgers. I just do. I think that they are going to make their third quarterback a developmental project type. And the guy that I love for this specific role, the idea of we're taking a guy knowing he's probably not going to start for at least a year, if not 2 years, but a guy that can project to being a pretty good starter down the road, I think, is Michael Pratt out of Tulane. I was a huge fan of his going into the season. Had a bit of a roller coaster ride of a year. There's some bad on the tape. There's some good on the tape. But listen, if you get him in a room with Aaron Rodgers for 17-plus weeks of a regular season and prepping and seeing how all that works, I think you could buy in. So for me, Michael Pratt to pick at 134, get this team a quarterback.
Yeah, I saved some of his highlights the other day. I must not have labeled them yet because they're not coming up in the search. But
it's tough.
Pratt's a guy to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, the Jets sent a contingent. I think it was Todd Downing was at his workout. Mm-hmm. So, yep. I mean, I think they were there for him and their wide receiver, Jaquan Jackson. So, but one of the two, I mean, you could get them both even on day three, and that would be a lot of fun.
Put it up. Put it up. I want it right. Okay. Hold on. I got to do this correctly. Yeah, I need it. I need it. No, it's right. I need it right there. I need it right there. There it is. Thank you, Wild Wave. I am cooking. I told you I cooked. Just wait till you see my last two picks.
Absolutely. All right. So now we're all clear with the fourth round, fifth
my
round.
Next pick, I think we're... My next pick is 256 and 257, the last two picks of the draft. That's the last. That's okay. the two I have.
I have 185 and then the two sevens.
Okay.
Okay. I have 134, 185, and the two sevens.
Okay, so you do 134, and then I'll do 185. Yep. You do 185, and then we'll wrap it up in the seventh.
All right, I'll make it quick and simple. Jordan Jefferson, DT, having missed out on getting T'Vondre Sweat earlier in the draft, I wanted to address defensive tackle at some point. I think Jordan Jefferson is a guy who, again, really good player from a major program, is going to be able to step in and play right away. He's not going to have the impact that T'Vondre Sweat would have, but he's still good enough to get into that rotation early on, keep those legs fresh the way the Jets like to do it. And now that brings us to 185. Go ahead, Dylan.
I wish that you took Christian Haynes somewhere in your mock draft because of that Senior Bowl scuffle where he told Jordan Jefferson to go to church. Yes. That would have been hilarious. 185, I did go interior offensive lineman. Again, Mobile, a Senior Bowl guy. Javion Cohen, he didn't go to the combine. This is the guard from Miami. I just had his measurables, and then I just – flipped it to the quarterback page when you were talking, Chris. Let's see what I got here for Cohen. He was not a combine guy, which surprised me, but he was a Senior Bowl guy. 6'4", 319, 33 7/8 arms. So yeah, obviously he's going to, you know, probably be pegged as a guard. I thought he was just kind of, you know, consistent all week at Mobile. I didn't really write anything too negative or too positive about him. So I said, hey, in the sixth round, if you can get somebody who's just consistent, kind of just average, maybe he ends up being, you know, the second backup after Schweitzer. Not the end of the world. I don't know if he has position flexibility to play center or not. I would hope that they would, you know, figure that out and sign like a McGovern before they enter the draft, if that's the case. But I didn't mind Javion Cohen. I kind of leaned more Senior Bowl guys that I was just more knowledgeable about in general. And I felt like his value at 185, I think they had him in like the 160s on the PFF mock or on like the big board. So it felt like a value pick at 185 there. So Javion Cohen, guard from Miami.
Do you have a pick, Chris, or am I up again?
No, 256 and 257 for me. I sit this one out.
So for me, another Senior Bowl guy, and I may have taken him a little bit early. There may be a bit of a bias here because I've liked him for a couple years now. But again, Washington State defender again, so Brennan
we
Jackson.
We have clips for him, but we don't have clips for Michael.
Unfortunately, this was taken from the Hubble telescope, so it doesn't really do it justice. I know.
Is he number 80? What's that?
Number 80. I can't see any of these numbers. What do you mean? Is he number 80?
He is. Yes.
That's crazy.
The bottom of your screen spin.
If he's the guy on the bottom that destroyed the left tackle, I'm in.
Yeah. bottom of the screen right here.
Watch this left tackle. Doesn't have a chance. Hold on. I need it again. Nah. I need it one more time. This left tackle doesn't stand a chance on this rep.
Let's see if I can.
Sorry to the left tackle from Cal.
Yeah, no, you know what? I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry because this rep is awful. Just a traffic cone. Like he just was not in the way at all.
Yeah, and he is. Yeah, and he, you know, his productivity, he's one of those guys that every year his productivity at getting to the quarterback improved. He's one of the players I had a chance to speak to in Mobile, and I asked him, you know, what facet of his game did he think had made the most progress, and that's what he said. He said, you know, as a pass rusher, he felt like he got better every year, and that was reflected in the numbers. So, listen, when you're taking a pass rusher this late, the chances of him making it are very slim, but I feel like you got to take a swing on one this late if you can get a guy – like Jackson, who I've seen pretty much universally late day three to UDFA. So maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but I like the kid, so I took him there.
All right, I'm going to package both my seventh round picks into one little spiel here. It's 256 and 257, 257 being Mr. Irrelevant. With the first one, I took Tyler Owens, safety from Texas Tech. Not a Senior Bowl guy. I think that's the first one since Malik Nabers for me, not at the Senior Bowl, but along the same lines of Jalen Wright, just explosive athlete, 12 foot 2 inch broad, 41 inch vertical. Other than that, I don't really know too much about him. I can't wait to actually study him because now that I put him in my mock, I probably should, but I've seen him as early as the early sixth and I've seen him almost borderline UDFA. So he's one of those explosive athletes that probably has some red flags on his tape that need to be, you know, coincided with the numbers that he put up at the combine. So interesting pick there, but I had to go get a safety because until the Jets do something at safety, whether it's a veteran addition or a trade, even I doubt they're going to trade for a safety. They like to just go kind of low budget at the position. Tyler Owens is the pick there for me. And then 257, Mr. Irrelevant. I did this on purpose. I picked a quarterback. Senior Bowl again, went back to the well. Probably one of the best quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, easily.
Maybe it's because it was his home stadium. South Alabama quarterback, Carter Bradley.
Son of a coach. You know,
is he? Okay, that's cool. I didn't know that. Yeah. Gus Bradley. Okay, well, Gus is a defensive coach, so to have a son be a quarterback is kind of cool. Gus isn't in the league still, right? Sidebar completely. Yeah, I don't think he is.
Because that's me, that'd be, look.
It'd be cool if he could like cook up against his dad's defense. But we got him at 6'3", 218.
That's the BC for the Colts. Be respectful.
Tell me the Jets played the Colts this year.
You know
that'd be fun. That'd actually be really fun. Even if it was preseason, just to see Carter Bradley against his dad's defense. But yeah, I mean, he's got everything. Not like a special talent by any stretch, but you know the mindset's there. If his dad is a coach, he's been around the game of football his entire life. So I felt really comfortable taking him here just because I got eyes on him visually at the Senior Bowl, and I did think he was the consistent best quarterback all week from day one, two, and three.
They do play the Colts.
That's my mock.
During 2024 season. So there you go. I'll do the same thing. I'll package my two together. Guys, what's better than four offensive picks in a row? We got to get some defense involved. I have a defensive run here for these last two picks. Listen, if you go back and look at every draft that Joe Douglas has been a part of, he does not end the draft without having at least somebody along the defensive line, whether it's a defensive end, whether it's a lineman, a tackle. He's getting somebody that's an edge rusher, pass rusher, get after the quarterback type. So why don't we go to a program that's probably going to have a player taken in the first round, probably inside the top maybe 15 to 20 picks. But let's take a guy who at his pro day, and I want to make sure I get this correct, a 4.5 to 40 at his pro day. A guy who's got a top 30 visit with the Seattle Seahawks. Let's go. Edge rusher from UCLA, Grayson Murphy with pick 256. This team is going to get an edge rusher in some capacity in this draft, so I felt 256 was the right pick. And I'll tell you right now, 257, I know nothing about this kid, but he's Mr. Irrelevant. Give me a small school corner. Give me Willie Drew out of Virginia State. A small school corner is Mr. Irrelevant on this football team? I'm in.
Yeah. Completely, I actually don't hate it. I think it's funny that you picked one of the Murphy twins because he was the twin that did not get invited to the damn combine. How are you going to invite one twin and not the other? Like, I get it that everything's probably going to be the same anyway, but, like, that's just I feel bad for the
kid. I was going to make a reference to that movie Twins, but I realized how young you guys were, and you probably wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Free, Parent Trap? That's a Twins movie, isn't it?
No, the Twins was when one twin was Arnold Schwarzenegger and the other one was Danny DeVito.
But hold on.
I'm like, that's how you only invite one twin to the combine.
But Parent Trap also applies.
Okay. Full I know House? The name of the movie. I've never seen it.
Full House? No, the Twins?
Oh, okay, yeah.
There's a lot of twins I could come up with that are a little bit old school. But no, the one you referenced, I went over it. I'm right on my head.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Come on.
You know what? I don't think I've ever seen start to finish.
It was twin brothers.
I don't think I've ever seen start to finish an Arnold movie. I don't think there's one.
No?
Kindergarten Cop, man. Kindergarten Cop. It's a good one.
No. Never saw
or
that.
Jingle All the Way, dude.
Never seen
that recently.
Turbo Man.
Never seen it.
Turbo Man.
Never seen it.
Yeah, solid. I have two picks left. Joe Douglas. Always, always, always takes a running back. I'm taking Dylan Johnson, the running back out of Washington. Can catch it out of the backfield. I got a couple Washington guys. Catches it well out of the backfield. Good runner. Really tough. It would be pretty difficult to be a poor runner behind that offensive line because all those guys, you know, they have a bunch of NFL top 100 type talent on that O-line. But I'm taking Dylan Johnson there. And then with my final pick, a guy I've tweeted about a couple times, talked about a few times, Anthony Gould, Oregon State wide receiver, smallish guy, doesn't have the greatest catch radius, but man, is this dude explosive, especially now looking at the new NFL rules with the how they've made it illegal to tackle. Give me a slippery guy like him who's going to be tough to get your hands on and could be a big-time playmaker. And also the changes. Listen, these changes to the kickoff, we're going to see a ton of big returns.
Yep.
You have like one line of defense. Make one or two guys miss and you're gone. And a guy like Anthony Gould with his explosiveness, his shiftiness, and his experience as a return. And a matter of fact, Dylan, I believe when we were at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, out for dinner, grabbing some barbecue, and the East-West Shrine game was on, Anthony Gould was running a kick back for a touchdown while we were eating. So give me some Anthony Gould, explosive little guy who you know could be an immediate impact guy on specials for this team.
All right, so I genuinely thought this was a typo on the database that I was pulling the combine results from. He had a 4.16 short shuttle.
Excuse
that
me?
Is stupid. To go along with a 4.3940, yeah. This is the guy who's gonna be the rule change in the NFL in terms of the kickoff. And I mean, I'm in favor of it, obviously the kickoff and the player, but yeah, I know you profiled him on the site a couple weeks
ago. Oh
back,
yeah, I did a profile on him too. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so small size at 5'8", 174. But it doesn't matter if you're the kickoff return specialist. He might be our best kickoff return specialist since Andre Roberts.
I almost want a smaller guy hiding behind those big blockers and all that traffic and bounce out and take it to the house.
Right, and I do want to give a shout-out to you for your interview earlier with Thomas Morstead. I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should go check that out as soon as this is over. I do want to shout-out Thomas for putting under, like, his
dude,
name.
Dude, I missed it's that. I didn't know where you came up with that.
It was so good.
And then I went back and watched it because I'm just looking at him. I'm not reading this. And if I would have seen that, I probably would have cracked a joke or two, you know, like, you know.
This man wrote holder of Greg's balls.
Yeah, Greg's ball holder. I wish I would have noticed that. Where is Dylan coming from with this?
Can I jump in with some breaking news to just calm everybody? I just want to calm everybody down, okay? I want everybody to relax because I know it was a big deal for everybody. But Connor Hughes is reporting. Quote, there was no verbal argument between Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson at the NFL's annual meeting reception. I know because I was at the party where this apparently happened, feet from Saleh and Johnson before Johnson and Jets contingent left. Woody took them out to dinner. Checked in with two sources at the dinner, confirmed nothing happened there either, end quote. So there you go.
Yeah, I didn't even read that article. I thought there's no way.
Never a dull moment.
Nope. Yeah, and I mean, even if there was something they wanted to hash out, they're not doing it in public.
No.
So, yeah.
Not when the current state of things are as what they are, as delicate and fragile as they are. Somebody put in the chat Predator, greatest movie ever.
Never
I think it's a Schwarzenegger movie. Chris, you had to have seen the old Batman where he was Mr. Freeze.
Nope. Never
Come
seen
on.
That nope.
I never
no?
saw that. I don't watch superhero movies, though.
Oh, man.
I did watch Joker, though. That was awesome. That wasn't really a superhero movie.
No,
it was a super villain movie.
That was like a dark psychological movie, which I love. Totally got into that.
So
Commando.
I told
never
you guys,
saw Commando.
Nope. Never seen that either.
Nope. I did tell you guys in the pre-show that I have a hard out.
Oh, yeah, you got a hard out.
So I am going to bounce. I don't know how much you guys got left, but I am going to bounce. I got to go to dinner. So I appreciate getting the 7-round mock in. Everybody can flame me in the chat. Chris, you did kind of cook. I'm not going to lie.
I told you I cooked. I told you.
So yeah, I'll see you guys next week. And then I guess you guys will tell the group or the listeners what we're going to do maybe for the draft. So I'll catch you guys. Yeah, I'll catch you guys next week.
All right. Enjoy your dinner. Dylan, have a good one.
I mean, so, we could tease it here to close the show. We could tease what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, we hadn't discussed what our plans were for the draft. I was driving home. It was either yesterday or today. And I thought to myself, we haven't really made a plan. Are we going to – because last year Dylan and I just went live. We'd go live like 10, 15 minutes before the Jets picked in case there was a trade up. But we might just do the whole damn thing. We talked about it before the show today. I'm going to watch the whole damn thing. It might be a little trickier for me being that it's a 1 a.m. start time for me, you know, and then and working on through. But listen, I work nights. I'm usually up at those times anyway. So hopefully, I don't know if we'll have one viewer or two viewers, but whoever wants to tune in and check out our thoughts on what teams are doing. And I'm sure, given that much time on the air, Aver, we may have on an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie in the background.
It's true.
That we're all watching simultaneously to get Chris's live reaction to a Schwarzenegger flick. Who knows?
And I think too, what'll be fun is and we haven't discussed this, but I think we'll all do predictive mock drafts for the draft, and we'll grade those as they happen. We'll discuss the players because we'll probably have watched all of the players that go off the board by that point. So I have to do some behind the scenes stuff to be able to make sure that day is clear. But I think that is certainly in the plans for us because we love the draft. So we're going to be watching it anyway. So we might as well turn our cameras on and talk about it. And hopefully you guys will enjoy being because there's I think a cool nature in this year for the draft for the Jets of they could move up. They could stay after they pick. They could potentially get back into the first round. There's a lot of stuff that could happen on night one for the Jets. So I think there's a lot of storylines that could play out. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I'm glad I made the Gould pick because it got me thinking about the rule changes and just wanted your thoughts on them, Chris. What do you feel with the hip drop, not popular among NFL players. Everybody pretty much universally blasting it. I don't like it. I know that I haven't heard anyone say they do like it yet, other than the people who made the change. And that's just kind of the way it goes sometimes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't like it because I don't trust NFL officials to do this correctly, right? And I think that's the reason. I think the idea and premise behind it is great because I think if you see the videos of the plays they're trying to remove, this is where you tear knees and you tear Achilles and you have these lower body injuries that keep guys out for 6-8 months, even up to a year, right? And careers are never the same with some of these tackles. So the idea of trying to get rid of them, and the NFL did a study and say they happen about once per game. And so if we can remove plays like that are dangerous, I'm interested in that. I just don't trust the way the rule is written, and I don't trust NFL officials to do this correctly because I think you're going to get to a point where it's going to be impossible to tackle. And I think that's the concern I have with it. I think the idea and the methodology of, hey, let's try to get rid of this play that's super dangerous, I'm all for that. But I just think the implementation and I think the execution is something that I'm concerned about. And I think what you're going to see is get ready because I think the first couple of weeks of preseason, it's just going to happen on every single play because they're going to overemphasize it. Relax. They do this with every single rule change. The first maybe week or two of the season, they're going to remember the tush push play in the middle of the season last year where they got the Eagles. I think it was the Eagles where they got the Eagles for moving early. And then all of a sudden they just started doing it all the time. They did this with the, was it the Kadarius Toney offside play against the Bills in the regular season game the next couple of weeks, they started calling it all the time. Like once they change a rule or they make a determination, you start to see it a little bit more just to kind of teach it out of the game, and then it kind of settles down. I think that's what you're going to see with that. So I get the idea behind it. I just don't trust the execution.
Yeah, I think I think we're going to see it like almost every rule that's ambiguous, and it's such an ambiguous thing.
Yep,
is that you're going to see it where it appears like blatant letter of the law violation, and there will be no flag, and then there will be a questionable. Like that's why I didn't mind horse collar because that's probably the clearest one. Like you grab the back of a dude's collar and pull them down. There is no question about what. How much of yourself did you unweight before you and the player hit the ground? It's preposterous. And, you know, for people who said, I've had people say to me, look, it's the most dangerous tackle. It's the most dangerous play in the game. Okay, great. Now that you've removed it, now what's the most dangerous play in the game? Are we getting rid of that? And once that's gone, now what's the most dangerous? Like, if you just keep getting rid of the most dangerous play, you eventually get rid of all the plays. So I think they're going overboard. I think that's why a lot, you know, J.J. Watt saying put – and I've argued for years with people who say the league is getting soft. It's getting like flag football. And I still see dudes just getting blown up and annihilated every week. And I just laugh and go, look, I know there's some new rules, but this is not a soft game. But if we're going to get to the point now where defensive players are going to be like, can I tackle this guy? Should I just kind of wrap up and fall backwards and pull him with me? Like, now you're really softening the game if it gets to that point. So we'll see. I didn't love it. A lot of folks didn't. That'll wrap this one up. Mock draft 1.0. I think each year we try not to go overboard and do 15 mock drafts. But we'll do one tonight. And then I would imagine we will do one the final show before the actual draft. We'll have another mock. And then on draft day, probably a whole lot of us, if you guys want to drop in, comment, check it out. But that'll wrap it up. Have a good one, Jets fans. Chris, thanks again. Be sure you're following Chris on Twitter, Chris and Dylan at D Term and at Chris Schubert. Have a good one, Jets fans.